It's time for our visit with Main Street Magazine on Tuesday mornings, right around 7:20, even though it's 7:17. Thorin Christensdottir joins us, and we take a look at just some of the stories in this month's episode of Main Street Magazine. Good morning, Thorin.
Good morning. How are you?
Fine. We had a little bit of rain again at my house last night. That's two nights in a row.
Oh, good.
So my lawn went from totally brown to mixed in green last night, and I'm anticipating that there'll be a little more green today. But that's
It's getting pretty crunchy.
Oh gosh, really crunchy. That's about all the type of rain that we have is really good for. Not much for helping there's a stream that comes down from Mount Riga behind my back in my backyard. I've been there I think 11 or 12 years now. Bone dry, first time in 12 years. Bone dry. I don't know what this says about the environment, but I don't hear the ducks anymore that they used to float around in there.
Right.
All right. Let's take a look at some of the stories that you've got. We got a visit by Mary O'Neill to the Clark.
We do. She went to see the new Verdin exhibit, which, I told Mary before she went that that it is, someone had told me that this might be the most important exhibit that the Clark has ever had because of the collection that is there for this Rodin exhibit. And so she went up and met with the fine folks there at the Clark who gave her a tour of it, and she concurred that it's quite special. So she shares a little bit about Rodin and this exhibit in particular.
Is it there for a while, or is it something that people should schedule fairly quickly?
I forget, to be honest, when it ends, but it's been going for, I think it started early June, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, the Clark, you know, there's so many great museums in our area that are all within about a 45-minute to an hour drive, and the Clark is one of them. Of course, Mass MoCA and what they do up there is another one, but they're all over the place, and we're very lucky because they're close at hand. You don't have to travel 2.5-3 hours to take a look at some art, whether it's paintings or pictures or sculpture, that you won't see normally.
Right.
We will move on to the next story. Finding joy through flow and play.
Yeah, Regina wrote a little piece about that, about how life happens sometimes, and the importance of finding flow, which is something that Ian Striever had written about in our May issue, about flow in particular and the theory behind flow and how that works in psychology. So Regina here is connecting it more with play as well, and she talks about her surfing and some of her and her friends' experiences and how they generate their own flow and play in life.
It is interesting, and you know, when you look back at that, like I'm 69, so I can look back what I was like even 10 years ago, and mm-hmm. it totally changed. And to 10 years before that, it totally changed. Mm-hmm. What I did in my I don't call it private time, but in my time where for 5 or 10 years I was a wiffle ball addict. Then I went through a bowling phase, and I went through a golf phase, which really took my time. I used to golf like 5 days a week.
Oh, my gosh.
And now I'm in my not doing anything phase, just enjoying my animals and my house. For the time being, that's the phase that I'm going through. But the phases are amazing. If you take a look back at your lifestyle and think what you did with your free time, it really is amazing. The mm-hmm. way you find things to do. I also like to cook. You know, that's the whole thing. Cooking.
Well, one of the things that she talks about are play personalities. So maybe you can find one there that matches that.
Eating a hot dog eating contest, maybe for me.
Maybe you're the storyteller. That's one of them. Or the director.
Yeah, and I could be the director. I could be mm-hmm. the storyteller, not the director. I let people boss me around. I can't boss people around. That's what people who work with me are a little afraid of me, because I get excitable, but they don't take orders. I don't give orders. I really don't. That's one thing people that work with me, they don't mind working with me for that. Mm-hmm. Your next story is an interesting story. The go-to social media platforms of younger generations. Your kids are always on your phones. Before we start talking about that, I saw a news story yesterday mm-hmm. on a very decent restaurant mm-hmm. in New York City that when you go in, they don't take your cell phones, but if you sit at a table and immediately start talking on your cell phones, they won't come over and wait on you until you put the cell phones away.
Huh. Good for them.
Yeah. They don't tell you to turn them off, but they want you to, you know, and if you say, how come no one's, well, because of your cell phones. So put your cell phones away and we'll wait on you. I think that's a pretty interesting thing to do.
Well, that's certainly a commentary on our society today.
Yeah, it certainly is. But let's go back to the story. Your kids are always on your phones.
Yeah, so Lindsay wrote this piece, and she kind of dove into some of the main platforms, and then like TikTok and Instagram, and talked a little bit about, you know, how they, what it is that their purpose is, and how they kind of work, and, you know, who's kind of on their platform to do what. And then she also talked about a new platform called Be Real. And it was funny, when I talked to my proofreader when we were going over changes to this issue, she was like, I have to tell you, I was, you know, reading this and, you know, this Be Real thing. And she's like, I've never heard of it before. And I said, well, frankly, neither had I before Lindsay brought it up. And then she's like, I asked my 13-year-old, hey, do you know about this Be Real? She's like, yeah, Mom, I'm on it right now. So I just thought that was pretty funny that, you know, we're obviously at a certain age and weren't aware of it. So this was, you know, interesting just for that fact to learn a little bit about it and see some of the changes that have come to the other platforms.
Now, we're going to talk about something that is, just blew me away when I saw it. It's not a story. It's not a story. It's an ad. It's an ad that's in Main Street Magazine.
Yes.
Restaurant bar space for sale or lease, Millerton, New York, the New York Times, 52 Main.
Yes.
I just about hit the floor when I saw that, because that is one of the most popular spots around.
It is. And, you know, people go through changes, and yeah. I think Eleanor is looking to her next chapter, and as far as I know, and I know COVID has, you know, has had a real impact on her and her business, obviously, and she's such a hard worker. She's there every single day and working, and I know she's a little tired, but, you know, people, she loves her patrons and she loves her business, you know, but I think she's just maybe looking for the next chapter and willing to pass the baton to someone who would be interested.
Well, that's funny, because I did have somebody in radio ask me, Marshall, what are you going to sell? You know, when are you going to get out of the radio business and take it easy and sell it to somebody else? And this is another person who runs a radio station, owns a radio station. I looked at him and I said, what would I do?
Yeah.
This is all I've done my whole life. What would I do? You know, that thought had never even crossed my mind. What would I do for my next chapter of my life? Seeing as this has been, really, ever since I got out of high school, this has been my life. So it's interesting. And I know restaurant owners face a real tough challenge exactly because of what happened in COVID. And it's hard to get employees now, even though we're on the rebound from COVID. And you put so much work and effort into it. I can see where somebody would say, you know, maybe it's time to move on. But it surprised me, that's all. An ad that becomes a basic news story.
Yeah, well, you know, the employee, you can't drive anywhere without seeing a help wanted sign. So
yeah.
That's not just, you know, isolated to the restaurant industry. But I know Eleanor's had a challenge with that, just like so many of the others around here. And then there's fierce competition for chefs and waitresses or waiters. And so I know that's been a challenge for her for the last couple of years as well. But she's, you know, she's still maintained her business. And, and it's, as you said, one of the most popular spots around. And I hope it continues. I hope that someone else is interested in keeping it going, keeping the legacy of it going, and it as a hub in the center of Millerton.
You're right. Most popular signs you see around are help wanted and real estate. Real estate for sale. Even though most of the inventory is pretty much gone, that always opens up.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, I think I see more help wanted signs now than real estate signs. But a year ago, it was like 50-50.
I went down the street a year and a half ago out of Salisbury and Lakeville, and there were 24 houses on that street, and there were 18 for sale signs.
Stop it.
No. And you know what? Within a month and a half, they were all gone. It's been tremendous turnover. Crazy. Tremendous turnover. On to the next story. You've got a great story analyzing the impact of rural hospital closures saved Sharon Hospital from closing its services.
Yeah, so you've had some interviews. You've had some news reports on this, as has the Lakeville Journal, some of the other publications around, and I felt it was our time to have something on the subject, because I don't think a lot of people are aware of it, despite the efforts of some of the media and both Nuvance and the Save Sharon Hospital group to get the word out. And there's a lot of confusion about what's happening. So I had asked Regina to research what it means for having small hospitals in small communities like ours and the impact that they have. And she included some statistics about employment and the percentages that hospitals and organizations like Noble Horizons and schools like Hotchkiss, what type of employers they are and what they mean to our community. And then she looked at, she tried to find both sides and what Nuvance's stance on a number of the things is, as well as the Save Sharon Hospital group is, and dive into what the actual issue is. And so she did that, and then we kind of leave it to the reader to dissect from there. But, what they're proposing is closing the labor and delivery and changing some of the ICU hours, as well as the OR hours, I believe it was. Don't quote me directly on that, because I'm not reading the article right now, but Regina has all that information right in there.
You know, we've tried to, I've interviewed a couple of physicians, and also Victor Jermak, who's been involved with Save Sharon Hospital, and he's more on the fiduciary side. And I've interviewed people from Nuvance Health, there is definitely a lack of understanding or a misunderstanding by the public.
Yes.
What's going on. And that's despite the incredible efforts of Save Sharon Hospital to put their points across. And there's a misunderstanding. And there's a lack of knowledge that bridge has to be gapped for people to understand what it means to have a full service local hospital. So I hope this story helps point that out more to people. And we're going to try to interview more people as well on this, because that gap of knowledge has got to be closed. So people know the truth about what's going on and hear it from both sides and understand what healthcare weighs in the balance.
Exactly. And I think the impact on our local community is important, because if, for example, labor and delivery closes, you know, if you're a high-risk pregnancy or if you are having a complication, all of a sudden you no longer have a 10 or 15-minute drive, but you have to go to where? To Great Barrington, Torrington, Poughkeepsie? You know, that's a long way to go. And, you know, I just remember, you know, my first pregnancy, how scary it was, and the fact that, you know, come to the end of your pregnancy, you're at the doctor's office every other day, it feels like. So just that drive. Plus, you know, to me, it's also, you go to your OBGYN and then you ask them, okay, where's a pediatrician and what other service, you know, so it's like you create a network. So what happens when you start closing some of those services is something that, you know, popped out in the article to me and in Regina's research as the trickle down effect that it will have on our community.
All right. These stories and more in this month's edition of Main Street Magazine. Thorne, we'll check in with you again next Tuesday and cover some more of these articles.
Sounds fantastic. Have a great week.
Take care. Thorne Christendotter, Main Street Magazine, joins us here with Main Street Magazine on Robin Hood Radio.